Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Johann Sebastian Bach, The Learned Musician, by Christoph Wolff, narrated by John Pruden. Publisher's Note: This audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type Johann Sebastian Bach into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then under the Supplemental Content section, please enter the access code Bach, and then click the Unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. Preface to the updated edition. Quite a few books on Johann Sebastian Bach have appeared over the past several decades, and in particular on the occasion of the last Jubilee year, 2000. Virtually without exception, either they are devoted to describing the composer's life and works, or they clearly focus on some aspects of his music. In contrast, the present book was intended as a decidedly biographical presentation, even though the biography of a musician cannot avoid discussing musical aspects and mentioning actual works. Therefore, I had to include essential musical references, but the discussion of specifically musical facts is limited to what is most necessary, and a detailed explanation of the composer's development and musical language is consciously omitted. Instead, the intention was and remains to update the current state of knowledge, what we know about Bach's life and the more immediate context of his being and his workings, which has not been done since Philipp Spitta, that is, for well over 125 years. For this purpose, as many accessible source materials as possible were taken into account and evaluated, but discussing them all, with their often varied interpretations of events, had to be passed up. The bibliography of this book makes this aim clear, even though the preface to the first edition did not say so explicitly. I have been asked repeatedly why Albert Schweitzer's Bach book of 1908, by far the most widespread and influential work ever on the composer, is not cited in the bibliography. The answer is both simple and unapologetic, because in no way does it involve neglect. Schweitzer, as a declared Wagnerian, given the impermanence of his insights for understanding Bach's expressive musical language, in fact contributed weightily, and thereby essentially dislodged Spitta. However, that certainly does not apply to the area of biography. In that regard, he not only depended on Spitta, but also lagged behind him in many ways. On the whole, Spitta's biographical sketch gave authoritative direction for the 20th century within the framework of a wonderful presentation of Bach's life and work. This orientation also pertains especially to Spitta's emphatic avoidance regarding the human side of Bach, which is difficult to approach and so is usually neglected. Therefore, this book offers an attempt, not restricted in a small part, such as Chapter 11, to diminish slightly the prevailing abstract view of Bach. Only in writing this book, and even more pointedly in the aftermath, did it become clear to me how much the late 18th century tradition of understanding Bach as a musical cult figure goes back to the composer's apparent furtherance and propagation of his self-image. In the end, what we know today is that Bach was a highly self-conscious man, one who was seemingly not shy about styling himself as a kind of star in his surroundings and in the circle of his students. The question of how much the basis for the picture of musical genius, for the view of the unchanging uniqueness of his art, goes back to Bach himself, I have pursued elsewhere. Most of all, the retrospective portrayals in the obituary, which go back to Bach's own reports, offer discernible traces in this regard, as does Bach's establishment of his historical place in the framework of the family genealogy and the old Bach archive. It speaks to the vitality of a branch of research when, in the space of roughly a decade, new knowledge has been uncovered that proves relevant to the biographical representation. Considering the ongoing systematic research in Central German church, state, and communal archives that has been undertaken by the Leipzig Bach Archive since 2002, we may be sure that in the future, further pertinent materials will turn up that will require future updating. All new and genuine Bach documentary material collected through 2006-2007 has now been published as the Bach Archive in Volume 5 of the Bach Documenta series, Dokumente zu Leiben, Werk und Nachwirken Johann Sebastian Bach, 1685-1800, editor Hans Joachim Schulze, Kassel, 2007. The publication of the present reprint of my book, in addition to allowing for the silent correction of misprints in the main text, provides the opportunity of making material corrections and adding supplementary information that seems to me especially relevant from a biographical perspective. The following paragraphs address this purpose by briefly summarizing the most important new knowledge that has been represented from 1999 through 2011. Supplied with pertinent bibliographic citations and, where necessary, by relating them to the biographical context. To avoid costly changes, these addenda and corrigenda have not been worked into the main text. Only the dates in the chronologies were amended and corrected, respectively. Author of the Newton-Bach Analogy, 1750. The author of the open letter of August 28, 1750, signed A., in which the names of Newton and Bach were first connected with each other, was until now thought to be Johann Friedrich Agricola. However, the text must be ascribed to Johann Adolf Scheibe, whose name was often concealed under the pseudonym Alfonso, and who, after the turmoil from his 1737 attack had died down, wrote only positively about Bach. Kai Kupp, Johann Adolf Scheibe, als Verfasserzweier anonymer Bach Dokumenta, B.J., 2003, pages 173 through 196. Musical Beginnings, Buxtehude, Boom, and Reinken. The most important new findings regarding Bach's youthful years result from the discovery in 2005 of Bach's earliest music manuscript. The so-called Weimar Tablature, a composite manuscript, contains, among other pieces, a copy of Dietrich Buxtehude's longest, technically most demanding, and compositionally most sophisticated organ chorale. The elaborate fantasy on Luther's hymn, Nun freut euch lieben Christen gemein, Books W.V. 214. The clean and error-free manuscript that originated in Ohrdruf before 1700 is notated in German tablature, and was written by the 13-to-14-year-old Johann Sebastian Bach, provides the first reliable evidence for the unusually high level of proficiency and technical competence of the young student. It also demonstrates his early acquaintance with Buxtehude's organ music while studying under the tutelage of his brother, Johann Christoph. A second manuscript contains the famous and similarly extensive chorale fantasy On Wasserfluss in Babylon by Johann Adam Reinken, now the earliest known source of this unusual composition. Bach's copy indicates at the end, A Domino Georg, Bume Descriptum Anno 1700 Lüneburgi, written out at the home of Herr Georg Bohm in the year 1700 in Lüneburg, and proves that the contact with Bohm goes back to the first year in Lüneburg, if not before, and that it was the Lüneburg organist Bohm who apparently put Bach in contact with Hamburg Meister Reinken and his music. Moreover, the document clarifies Bohm's important role as mentor and possibly also as facilitator of Bach's stipend as choral scholar at the St. Michael's School, and suggests that Lüneburg represented a decisive step in the career of the young musician. On Johann Adam Reinken. Newly discovered archival records regarding Reinken's year of birth prove that he was not 99 when he died in 1722. The ages that Johann Mattheson gives in 1739 rest apparently on conscious exaggeration. Reinken was born in De Venter, Holland, in 1643. Therefore, at the time of his meeting with the Latin school student Bach, he was not yet 60 years of age, some 6 years younger than Buxtehude, although from Bach's perspective he distinctly represented the older generation. At the Hamburg encounter in 1720, he was 77. Ulf Grappentein, Reinken Johann Adam, Grove Music Online. Also his Zwillingskompositionsregeln aus dem Nachlass Johann Adam Reinkens, Hamburger Jahrbuch für Musikwissenschaft 18, 2001, 71 through 110. On Johann Effler. C.P.E. Bach could not, in 1775, answer what took his father from Lüneburg to Weimar, so Forkel's question has remained unanswered since then. My suspicion that the Weimar court organist Johann Effler had a hand in Bach's appointment to the Weimar court during the first half of 1703 is now confirmed on the basis of a previously unknown document. Michael Maul of the Bach Archiv Leipzig was able to identify a note of Effler's dated March 26, 1678, in the public record office at Weimar that describes Effler's duties as organist at the Dominican Church, Predigerkirche, in Erfurt as Johann Pachelbel's predecessor. The note also contains an express statement that, of the best musicians, Herr Bach was taken into their ranks, and that he handles the clavier whenever they make music. During the period 1667 through 82, Johann Christian Bach was director of the Erfurt Town Musicians, which also employed his two younger brothers, Johann Aegidius and Johann Nikolaus. Their first cousin, Johann Ambrosius Bach, played in the group too from 1667 to 1671 as a violinist. After that, Ambrosius Bach's continued connections with Erfurt, he also married an Erfurt woman, led in 1684, a year before the birth of his son, Johann Sebastian, to an offer to become director of the town music company, which he declined. The direct musical connections that have now been identified bestow a new importance on Effler's relationship with the Bach family. They make it plain that the young Sebastian, at the latest in 1702 on his return from Lüneburg to Thuringen, if not earlier, could find an influential patron in the Weimar court organist. Possibly Effler had already played a role as a go-between in Bach's application to Sangerhausen. The contacts were not broken off during Bach's time in Arnstadt and Mühlhausen, so that Effler, in 1708, in arranging for his own successor, recommended Bach to the Duke of Weimar. In 1704, Johann Effler worked alongside Johann Nikolaus Bach in assessing an organ of the Collegiate Church in Jena. Here he turned out to be an opponent of mean-tone temperament who, together with the oldest son of Johann Christoph Bach in Eisenach, demanding an organ tuning that, in addition to the genus purum of the customary keys, would enable the harmonically strengthened genus mixtum, or genus diatonico chromatico enharmonicum. Apparently, a modern temperament was preferred in the Bach family circle. Michael Maul, Frühe Urteile über Johann Christoph und Johann Nikolaus Bach, BJ 2004, 157-68. About the cantata Nach der Herr verlanget mich, BWV 150. This early cantata has been variously considered of doubtful authenticity. Hans Joachim Schulze was able to demonstrate that the work originated as one commissioned by the Mühlhausen town councillor Konrad Mechbach, whose name occurs in the cantata text in the form of an acrostic. Hans Joachim Schulze, Rätselhafte Auftragswerke Johann Sebastian Bachs, Anmerkungen zu einigen Kantatentexten, BJ 2010, 69-93. About the repertoire and context of the early vocal works. On the basis of a recent discovery in London, the cantata fragment Meine Seele soll Gott loben, BWV 223, ascribed to Bach since Spida, can definitely be stricken from the Bach canon. Remnants of the old choir library of St. Blasius' church in Mühlhausen, together with an old inventory, have been tracked down in the Staatsbibliothek in Berlin. The works of Praetorius, Demantius, Schütz, Hammerschmidt, the elder Alle, and Briegel contained there were available to Bach, even if we do not know whether or how he used them. Hans Joachim Marx, Finderglück, Eine neue Kantate von J.S. Bach, von G.F. Handel, Meine Seele soll Gott loben, BWV 223, Gutenger Handel Beiträge 10, 2004, 179-204. Daniel R. Melamed, Die Alte Chorbibliothek der Kirche D.V. Blasi zu Mühlhausen, BJ 2002, 209-216. About the tuning of the organs in Arnstadt and Mühlhausen. Johann Friedrich Wender, the builder of Bach's organ in Arnstadt, was also responsible for the successful reconstruction in 1687 through 91 of the organ at St. Blasius's in Mühlhausen under Johann Georg Alle, Bach's predecessor there, who who evidently used tempered tuning early on. In 1690, Alla wrote an Ode to the Advantages of Well-Tempered Tuning, developed by Andreas Werkmeister, which allowed for harmonic triads on all semitone steps of the scale. So from the summer of 1703 on, Bach continuously had at his disposal instruments that set practically no harmonic or key limitations, a fact that clearly accelerated his interest in experimenting with extreme chromatics. Marcus Ratti, Die Temperierung der Divi Blasi Orgel in Mühlhausen, BJ 2001, 163-172. On Maria Barbara Bach. The surviving documents relating to Bach's first wife can hardly be surpassed in their limitations, recording only her baptism, marriage, and death. Nevertheless, Michael Maul of the Bach Archive Leipzig found a further small reference to her in the 1708 pew registry of the court church in Weimar. Under women's pews, Frau Bachinhof Organistin is listed as having sat on the right side of the nave in row 8, seat 3, diagonally behind the wife of court Kapellmaster Johann Samuel Dresser. Lebenszeichen von Maria Barbara Bach, Bach Magazine 4, 2004, 31, illustrated. A newly discovered vocal work from the Weimar period. The original source, printed text with autograph manuscript score of a completely unknown vocal work, unexpectedly turned up at the Duchess Anna Amalia Library in Weimar. It concerns an aria for soprano, two violins, viola, and continuo composed by Bach on the occasion of the 52nd birthday of his employer, Duke Wilhelm Ernst of Saxe-Weimar, on October 20, 1713. Bach set to music a 12-stanza German poem by the theologian Johann Anton Milius, 1657-1724, on the Duke's motto, Omnia cum Deo et nihil sine eo, everything with God, and nothing without him. The music is composed in the form of a strophic aria with ritornello, a genre popular in late 17th century Germany but not previously found among Bach's compositions. The work, written for a prominent occasion, confirms Bach's privileged position at the Weimar court even before his promotion from court organist to concertmaster in 1714. Michael Maul, Alles mit Gott und nix ohne ihn, Eine neue aufgefundene Aria von Johann Sebastian Bach, BJ 2005, 7-34. Edition within the series Facsimile Reihe Bachscher Werke und Schriftstücke, Neue Folge. Editor, Bach Archiv Leipzig, Kassel, 2005. The aria will be listed in the Schmieder catalog under BWV 1127. Weimar Instrumental Works. The early history of the Sonata for Organ, BWV 528, which goes back to a hypothetical trio sonata in G minor for oboe, viola da gamba, and continuo from around 1714, offers one of the few plausible traces of Bach's chamber music in Weimar. Peter Dirksen, Ein verschollenes Weimarer Kammermusikwerk Johann Sebastian Bachs, Zur Vorgeschichte der Sonata einmal für Orgel, BWV 528. BJ 2003, 7-36. On the examination of the organ in Gera. Newly discovered documents bring about substantial revisions to Bach's commissions as organ examiner in the Thuringian city of Gera. They pertain to three, not two, organs built by Johann Georg Finke. Moreover, Bach's visit to Gera, previously assigned to 1724, must now be moved to the period May 30th to June 6th, 1725. Bach was accompanied by two people, presumably Anna Magdalena Bach and the barely 15-year-old Wilhelm Friedemann. The trip was probably connected with a visiting performance at the Osterstein Palace, the residence of Heinrich XVIII, Count of Reuss. He traveled from Schleitz via Gera back to Kutten in August 1721, and on that occasion examined the organ at the palace church, as well as the progress made in building the organ in the Church of the Savior. He even saw to it that the large commission for the organ in the municipal church would also go to Finke. In 1725, Bach received a top honorarium of 30 Reichstalers for his certification of the two organs, in the municipal church and the Church of the Savior. On June 3, 1725, the first Sunday after Trinity, the large three-manual organ in the Municipal Church of St. John's in Gera was dedicated by Bach. Generous expenses for overnight lodgings and entertainment, including supplies of wine, brandy, coffee, tea, sugar, and tobacco, testify to his special VIP treatment. In Leipzig, Bach's new cantata cycle was supposed to begin on the first Sunday after Trinity in 1725, as it had the previous 2 years. Because of Bach's absence at the beginning of June, the irregular rhythm of the third cycle was already destined from the start. Its opening cantata, BWV 39, was composed in the following year and performed on June 23, 1726. Michael Maul, Johann Sebastian Bach's Besuche in der Residenzstadt Gera, BJ 2004, 101 through 120. For further updated details on Bach's organ examinations, see Christoph Wolff and Marcus Zeff, The Organs of J.S. Bach, A Handbook. Translator Lynn Edwards Butler, Urbana-Chicago and Springfield, 2012. On Augustin Reinhard Stricker. New research on Bach's Cöthen predecessor, Augustin Reinhard Stricker, provides important information about his lost German opera, Alexander und Roxana, magnificently produced on the occasion of the wedding of King Friedrich I and Sophia Louise of Mecklenburg-Grabau in December 1708, repeated in January 1709 at the Berlin court. Stricker, at the time chamber musician, tenor, and composer of the Prussian court Capella, sang the principal role of Neptune, god of the seas. Additionally, the cast of characters included dancers in the entree of the Amours and Plaisirs, the Prince of Cöthen the Elder, Leopold, the Prince of Cöthen the Younger, August Ludwig. Moreover, listed among the supernumeraries in Neptune's suite as well as in the ballet scenes is Margrave Christian Friedrich of Brandenburg, the king's brother and later dedicatee of Bach's Brandenburg Concertos. Bach's later employer, at the time 14 years of age and a pupil of the Berlin Ritterakademie, apparently received dance instruction along with his brother and participated actively in musical performances. His acquaintance with Stricker, who moved to Cöthen as Kapellmeister in the summer of 1714, goes back as far as the opera performances of 1708-09. Hans Joachim Schulze, von Weimar nach Cöthen, Risiken und Chancen eines Amtswechsels, Cöthener Bachhefte 11, 2003, 9-27. About Cöthen performances of cantatas BWV 21 and 199. Among the anonymous copyists of the original performance material of the cantata Ich hatte viel Bekümmernis, BWV 21, Johann Jeremias Goebel has now been identified. Goebel was cantor of the Reformed Calvinist Municipal School and therefore responsible for the music at the Reformed Cathedral Church, St. Jakob's Church, in Cöthen. This circumstance evinces for the first time that, on specific occasions, Bach also provided music for worship services in the main Reformed Church of the Principality, and not just in 1729 at the funeral of Prince Leopold. Conceivably, the occasion for the performance of BWV 21 was a Day of Repentance ceremony held in Cöthen every 5 years. One such service occurred during Bach's employment in Cöthen on May 1, 1721. The discovery of the autograph violin part for the soprano solo cantata Mein Herze schwimmt im Blut, BWV 199, rounds out our information about the Cöthen version of the work. We now know that it was performed around or after 1720 without oboe, with viola da gamba, instead of solo viola, and in the key of D minor, at low pitch, about 392 hertz. Michael Maul and Peter Volny, Quellenkundliches zu Bach-Aufführungen in Cöthen, Ronenburg und Leipzig Zwischen, 1720 und 1760, BJ 2003, 97-141. Tatjana Schabalina, Ein weiteres Autograph Johann Sebastian Bach in Russland, Neues zur Entstehungsgeschichte der verschiedenen Fassungen von BWV 199, BJ 2004, 11-40. On a guest performance in Serbst. A recent publication turned up the text to Bach's festive birthday music for Prince Johann August of Anhalt-Zerbst on August 9, 1722, which reveals the outline of the lost secular cantata. Probably on the same day, the 10th Sunday after Trinity, a corresponding festive church cantata for the Count's birthday was performed, but no traces of it have survived. Commissions for works and performances were apparently connected with a provisional joint administration of the Kapellmeister's office, which Bach looked after from nearby Köthen before Johann Friedrich Fasch took over the position in September 1722. One member of the Zerbst court orchestra was Johann Kasper Wilke Jr., brother of Anna Magdalena Bach, who had already made frequent appearances as a singer even before her marriage to the Köthen Kapellmeister. Barbara Royal, O vernuchte Stunden, da mein Herzog funden seinen Lebenstag, ein unbekannter Textdruck zu einer Geburtstagkantate Johann Sebastian Bach vor den Fürsten Johann August von Anhalt-Zerbst, BJ, 1999, 7-18. Hans Joachim Schulze, Johann Sebastian Bach und Zerbst, 1722. Randnotizen zu einer verlorenen Gastmusik, BJ, 2004, 209-214. On the 1720 trip to Hamburg. The archival documents that deal with appointing the organist at St. Jakobi Church yield details of the procedures and prove that Bach had already come to a decision after his concert at St. Catherine's and before the audition of the other candidates. But they also point out that the expectation of a financial payment from Bach was hardly decisive for his rejectionist attitude. Philipp Tanner, Bachs Bewerbung in Hamburg, Eine Frage des Geldes, Hamburger Jahrbuch für Musikwissenschaft, 18, 2001, 207-231. About Leipzig arrangements of Köthen Cantatas. Bach's official inauguration was originally planned for Pentecost 1723, but had to be postponed for 2 weeks for unknown reasons. Yet after signing his provisional contract on April 19th, Bach first prepared himself for the earlier inauguration and scheduled performances of the cantata Wer mich liebet, der wird mein Wort halten, BWV 59, for Whitsunday, as well as Erhöhtes Fleisch und Blut, BWV 173, and Erwünschtes Freudenlied, BWV 184, for the second and third days of Pentecost, respectively. Given the time pressure, all were parodies of vocal works from the Köthen period. However, when the date of the inauguration was moved to the first Sunday after Trinity, Bach broke off working on BWV 59. It remains to be seen whether this cantata in its four-movement form was performed on Whitsunday, May 16, 1723, at the Old Service in St. Paul's, the University Church. In any case, Bach postponed the completion of the three Pentecostal cantatas to the following year when they were performed at the Leipzig main churches. During his first year in Leipzig, Bach made greater use than heretofore assumed of vocal works from the Köthen years in addition to cantatas from the Weimar period. We may note that the cantata BWV 75 for the first Sunday after Trinity, still composed on Köthen paper, the cantata BWV 69A for the 12th Sunday after Trinity, and the first town council election cantata, whose original scores contain several movements as fair copies, reveal themselves as parodies rather than new compositions. The following movements can be traced to Köthen models: arias number 3 and 5 from BWV 75, the opening chorus from BWV 69A with its typically Köthen duet formations, based on BWV Appendix 50 unknown, and the opening chorus and arias number 3, 5, and 7 from BWV 119. Detailed comparisons between the Leipzig arrangements and their Köthen models provide conclusive evidence that the Köthen court capella, presumably like its Berlin predecessor ensemble and following French tradition, performed at low pitch, Tiefkammerton, about 392 Hz. Andreas Gluckner, Vom Anhalt Köthenischer Kapellmeister zum Thomaskantor, Köthener Werke in Leipziger Überlieferung, Köthener Bachhefte 11, 2003, 78-96. About the participants in Leipzig church music. The normal choral complement called for by Bach in his Memorandum of 1730, 1-2 concertists and at least 2 repianists for each vocal part of his elite ensemble, which has been cast into doubt by Andrew Parrott and Joshua Rifkin, is confined by 2 historical choir rosters, One from 1729 names 12 singers in the primary choir that Bach conducted, and another from 1744-45 names 17 singers. Moreover, it has become evident that Bach's instrumentalists and singers were regularly supported by
Sample complete. Ready to continue?